Does Florida State have the pieces to make Tony White's defense dominant at Florida State? That's what we're talking about today in part two of our defensive preview. As we've already talked the X's and O's, Michael, now it's time to talk Jimmy's and Joe's. We are only about 2 weeks from kickoff against Alabama. Man, this thing, it felt like offseason took about 6 years to get past just wanting to bury last year.
Yeah.
But man, ready to jump into this and talk some defensive personnel today. But before we do that, how are you? And thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jesse. I'm good. You know you're jonesing for football when the NFL preseason is on and you're like setting your clock to it because you just want to watch some like updated live football. And being 2 weeks away from Florida State versus Alabama, I cannot wait. I am so excited. I don't even care right now. I'm believing they can win a national title. I am all in on that juice right now.
You are drinking the Kool-Aid. By the way, speaking of preseason, we were all hoodwinked. DJ, you out here throwing 50-yard passes.
Exactly.
Bro, what? Maybe we just had the wrong color uniforms. He couldn't see red or something.
I think it's because every player is wearing some patch of a brick on them. That's why.
Must be. Maybe they put like a brick sticker on the back of their helmet so he knew who to throw it to. It's just ridiculous, man. But no, I mean, you know, just so excited for this matchup, man. It's going to be huge. And really, you know, the more you think about it, there's some good and some bad coming out of camp. We're going to start with some updates there. But, you know, it just, man, it gets you excited because I think Alabama's got some questions. Florida State's got some questions. And, you know, like we've talked about before, man, the pressure's on them. And so I think you come into this game letting it all hang out. But, yeah, man, we're gonna have a full Bama breakdown for you guys. I'm going to try and get somebody on that covers Alabama as well to give us a little bit of an inside look into that program. So stay tuned for that. You know, Michael, we got to ramp it up now that the season's getting here. No That's days right. off recording. Right. Today is my birthday recording
Happy
on my birthday.
So
I appreciate that. Before we jump into these camp updates, man, let's start with a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys got great stuff that will get you ready for game day. They got a wide selection, new logo, old logo. They got the college vault that you can shop there with some throwback gear as well. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee. If you're on your way to Doak, it's a convenient stop on the way there, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. If you're running late for game day, you can shop online and pick up in the store conveniently. Make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. That is Alumni Hall FSU and 10% with code SPEAR. So we appreciate them supporting us and for you guys supporting those that support us. So glad to have them back with us for this season. So Michael, let's talk about some camp updates because, man, for a closed camp, there's a heck of a lot of sound bites. There's a lot coming out of here. And I think we owe 99% of that to Tony White. Because,
thank you, Tony.
I have fallen in love with a football coach. And I think it's just because it's his no-nonsense, just straight shooter mentality. Yep. And I laugh because, man, you remember back under Taggart when we had Harlan Barnett. And no offense to Barnett. No offense to really even Adam Fuller. But a lot of times you would hear in the interviews like, oh, you know, well, he's a good football player.
And
man, Harlan used to always say, man, that's a good football player.
Yeah,
and it's like, bro, we're like 5-7. He's not a good football player.
Stop lying.
But Tony White will be like, he's not a good football player. Like, he is telling you the truth. And, man, I mean, when you open up your press conference and you're asked about how he feels about the defense coming along after two scrimmages, his opening line, I mean, wasted no time getting right into it, said some guys, frankly, need to step their asses up, man, and or they won't play. And I love to hear that attitude. And then, you know, a day or two later, you see Conrad Hussey get dismissed from the team. Apparently, there was an altercation with a coach. We can maybe talk a little bit about that later. But, man, I mean, it just seems like they are not playing around, right? They are not going to tolerate that. And, you know, I think, man, The main thing with this is this really kind of gives you an insight when you start looking at some of the older players, because, you know, originally we thought he was basically talking about Shaheem because we had heard Shaheem was running with the twos.
Right.
Apparently this is going for more than just Shaheem, obviously.
Yes.
But I think this kind of gives you an insight into what a big part of the problem was last year with some of those veteran players, just kind of having that individualistic, that entitled attitude, because it's not even – like Tony White said, I'll never be mad at you if the ball beats you there. That's part of the game.
Right.
But some of these guys just aren't giving effort. They're not doing what they're told to do. They're getting coached one way and going out there and doing different things. And, you know, how many times did we say last year, I know we want to blame the coaches, but the coaches aren't coaching them to miss tackles. They're not coaching them to miss blocks. And so I think that's such – this is revealing in a way of some of the problems that you had last year. But the difference is, I don't think this staff is going to tolerate it and allow these guys that aren't doing their part to sit around and poison the well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, they allowed a lot of that discontentment, loafing, just bad attitude on the season last year, on the team last year. And you saw what happened. You saw how that brought down the team, not just from a play on the field standpoint, but just from the internal stuff. I mean, we heard, you know, rumors all last season that the locker room culture was terrible. There were no leaders stepping up, a lot of bickering, a lot of fighting, a lot of, you know, just distrust and back talking to the coaches. Like, when you have stuff like that, man, it's no wonder that these defensive coaches and new coaches, offensive, Gus Malzahn, Tony White, they've come in and they're no nonsense coaches. You know, like Gus Malzahn, like say, I'm an old school football coach, you know, like Tony White's an old school football coach. You don't mess around. If you ain't playing, if you're not trying, if you're not giving your great effort, if you're not bringing great culture, you're done. And they just don't go out to, they don't have time to deal with your mess. They already got a mess on their own hands.
Yeah. And, you know, you think back to last year, we really didn't see a lot of guys get benched until they went youth movement once the season was already a wash. And it sounds like to me, man, I would expect there to be some more young guys playing potentially in game one, or at least not in game one by the time you get to that Virginia game when they got a few weeks to get some reps.
That's right.
But that's the thing, man. It sounds different, right? Like they're not going to allow it. You're not going to play. And I think that's big because you can't set that kind of example of having guys out there loafing. It's like you said, man, it's on tape. You can't argue what's on tape. And so last year we saw it on tape and they kept rolling them out there. And so I'm just excited to see that, like, man, point blank with what Tony White says, look, man, if you're going to be pussyfooting around, you know, or whatever, or not going full, or you got the other guys who are holding up their end of the deal and you're letting them down, it's not going to cut it, man. And so I think that's the best part. And one thing I will say, he's always said he's never been scared to roll with young players. Like they'll make mistakes and I will coach that up, but you can't coach motor. And so he's going to take those guys out of the game who aren't going to play their butts off. And, you know, it does make me a little bit nervous that for the Bama game, that maybe you were planning on some of these veteran guys and you might be rolling with some young pups there for that game. But, you know, at the same time, man, I feel like the same way as Tony White. Like, I would rather have guys go out there, make some mistakes, but play hard than have veterans out there who just are kind of half tailing it. You know what I mean? And so it makes me a little bit nervous that some of the guys you were going to count on throughout the whole season, not just the Bama game, maybe aren't going to be a part of the plan. But you know what, man? If you got some talented young guys who are going to play hard, man, let's roll with them.
Yeah, it does create concern because you were banking on that those older experienced vets would show up and finally get the message and want to go out with a bang. You know, this is their last season. But at the same time, you know, it's almost like what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? That old argument. Those vets last year, the moment they hit adversity, they shrunk back, right? Yep. They shrunk back to bad habits, bad attitudes. With freshmen and young stars, they don't know any better, right?
Right. Yep.
So they're just going to play their butts off, or that's the assumption that they would. But then the chicken or the egg conversation is, but then what happens when adversity hits them? They're not prepped. They haven't been experienced. So you're really just playing with fire either way, right? Either you're trusting the vets to step up and finally be what they are, or you're going to have to trust the young stars and freshmen to play beyond their experience.
Yeah, and I think that there's also a two-edged sword that comes with that too, right? Is on the one hand, you need to win right now.
That's right.
Like this coaching staff needs to win right now, and that's where you lean on that veteran presence. At the same time, you are now more excited about a lot of your young players than you are the older players. So, is the staff going to be around? Are those players going to be around long enough to take advantage of those skill sets past maybe year one or year two? And so I think that's kind of a tough situation to be in too, because it looks like the younger half of this roster might be the more exciting half of the roster anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, man. But, you know, starting with some of the young guys who flashed that got another mention is the Desir twins, man. I can't wait to see these guys.
Yeah. Like,
he talks about how they go hard all the time. They are chaos creators. They're disruptive players. And so, you know what, again, man, they got good size coming in as freshmen. And you know, in the trenches, it's kind of hard usually to see a contributor that young. But, I mean, we also have seen, and I'm not saying we have this on our roster, right?
Right.
But you also have seen Jeremiah Smith. You've seen Ryan Williams. You've seen these young guys contribute.
Yep.
There's nothing that says they can't, just because we haven't seen it happen a whole lot in the past, because maybe we had some things that weren't getting developed at certain positions there. But those are two guys that that I'm really excited to hear about. Again, keep coming up. Jason Jenkins on the defensive line. They say he's coming along nicely. Sounds like he'll be ready to go there for the Bama game. And Daryl Jackson moving around, playing a few different positions on the line. That's interesting as well. And then last one on the defensive line here, Kevin Wynn getting another shout out. He said Tony White talked about how he's losing some weight and trusting his training. Says he's one of those that goes out and puts it on film, man. So I think you're going to see some young dudes contributing, especially on this defensive line. But it does sound like it's not all the veterans who are doing bad, right? You still have some guys, and Daryl Jackson and Jason Jenkins are going to be a really big part of that line this year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think so too. And I'm really excited to see them play. Listen, the more depth they can try to develop on that line. You and I have been saying this all year, all season, all off season, man, we needed more depth there. We needed players to, if they weren't going to go get them in the transfer portal, we're going to need these young stars, these freshmen to step up. And so I'm excited to see, and hopefully they get some run in Bama. I mean, what a great experience that would. Now we obviously maybe not want them on critical downs, but if they get that run in Bama and then they get some serious run against East Texas A&M and Kent State, then, you know, they'll be great to have potentially leverage throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, they're definitely a down the road thing, but yeah, I mean, it's nice to hear the extra depth. James Williams has been better on defense. He talked about that as well. So there's a lot of exciting stuff, you know, both veteran and young players, right? Yep. The one thing with the defense is it sounds like we need to learn how to catch. We're dropping interceptions like we dropped touchdown passes last year.
Exactly.
But at the same time, man, did you see that Jabril Rawls grab? Ooh. That one hand? Was sick. I mean, that catch was ridiculous.
And in the wide receiver's face, it wasn't like the wide receiver just gave up. The wide receiver was fighting for the ball.
Yeah.
And Jabril just snatched that ball one-handed out of the air and said,
That there's some talent in that secondary. Let's just say that. Now, you got some guys that might not play, some veteran guys, but when you see what those young guys can do, man, and we're going to talk about them later in the defensive backs preview section, but man, there's some young guys that can really step up here. The last thing I want to say real quick on some of the fall camp updates here is offense sounds like it's been some up and down, right? We've heard some good things about the offensive line. We've heard Tommy Castellanos has thrown some picks, but he's also responded with a couple of touchdown drives after he threw some picks. You know, man, I will say this about Tommy Castellanos, right? I want him to be better.
Yeah.
But this is pretty much what I expected from him. I mean, he threw, 14 interceptions the first year. He threw 5 and 7.5 games the second year. He was on pace to throw about 10. He's going to make some mistakes. He's going to throw.
Fumbles each season. Yep.
Exactly. Like, he's turned – we said before in the position preview series where he's got some turnover issues.
Yeah.
But it's almost kind of like sometimes you got to live with that to have the electric, you know, ability that he does in the run and the pass game. And so, you know, I just think it's like you got to know what to expect, right? You're not expecting him to come out like Jameis in the first game and have, you know, more touchdowns and incompletions.
Right.
But I would like to see the turnover issues get cleaned up a little bit, but it does sound like he responded well, which I like to see.
Well, like, I think a couple of things. I think one, like you said, you're going to have to deal with some of the inconsistencies to get the explosives, but you just want that ratio explosive to inconsistency to be higher, right? You wanted a 3-1, 4-1, you know, maybe even 5-2, you know, for every three touchdowns he's throwing, maybe he throws one pick or maybe he has one fumble. Like, you can put up with those as long as they're not at critical times. What you can't put up with is you got two or three interceptions, you got a couple fumbles, and you got only one touchdown.
Yep.
You're scrambling all over the place. You're making explosives, but you're also you are the reason for a win, loss, fail more than you are just aiding to it. Right? That's what you don't want. But I will say, Jesse, I don't know if you saw the video where he's scrambling to his right and he throws the most god awful pass I've ever seen. And the corner turns around and just waiting for the pass. Why? I wouldn't have thrown that. And I'm an idiot when it comes to football. I would not have thrown that.
I think that's a big part of the improvement that he needed in his game, right?
Yeah.
There was a few instances last year where you go back and you watch the tape. And one of the biggest complaints with him was, like, he has a free 5 yards at a dump off. And he just continues to run around and make things happen. And then you either make a bad decision or you run the ball for 5 yards anyway.
Exactly.
Like, man, you got to learn to take the safe bet first, yes. right? I know yes. you always want to make something happen, but sometimes you just got to, man, you just got to get there. Rid of the ball,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yes.
Just take what the defense gives you. And I'm sure there were some coaching moments after that because it was a pretty bad decision to throw that ball and not a great throw either way. But again, yeah, I mean, it's just you got to know what to expect with Tommy, yeah. right? You're going to yeah. live and die with that. And I mean, you just hope, like you said, you hope he in a game situation, he yeah. takes care of the ball a little bit better. Maybe you're letting some stuff fly in practice to see what right. you can get out of it. But, you know, I think we talked about last year in only 7.5 games, he had 3 games with 3 or more turnovers. That's what you can't have happen.
Yeah, no.
You can't have a 3 and 4 turnover game like a little bit of what he did last year. And so right. The last thing, man, on fall camp real quick is, dude, I don't know that I've ever been more excited to see a player than Chroma, a.k.a. Blake Nicholson's daddy.
Hey, Blake Nicholson's boy, he put that boy on the poster.
And the social media team did him wrong by letting that clip get out. I mean, on the one hand, you want to see it. And I understand in a 3-second clip, you know, sometimes you just lose a rep, right? And it just looks real bad. That was embarrassing. I'm just
You ever seen those posters? It's like a hit and run, and it's got like the car behind. That was Blake looking like all sad.
Did anybody catch a license plate of that truck? But man, when you talk about Chroma, he's just different. And yeah. Yak said that too, man. Yak even said, like, man, he's just different. And, yeah. and so he looks grown for a freshman. Yeah. He's not scared of the contact. He even talked about in his press conference. He said, man, this is a lot of the same offense that we ran in high school. It's not really that much more physical than I think I'm used to adjusting to. So yeah. I think he's going to be ready to go. But Michael, you know, I think what was most interesting about Yak's press conference is he said, look, man, we're probably going to stick with 2 to 3 running backs.
Yep,
and it's kind of unrealistic to use 5 or 6 running backs in a year because, again, you never really give a guy a chance to get going.
Right, right.
And so I think when you talk about, you know, this is a really deep room that we talked about. Now, I'm sure there are going to be times and packages where they find a way to get some guys right. involved. But, you know, it's probably going to be Sawchuk. It's probably going to be Chroma. And it's probably going to be Roydell. That's probably going to be your top three. And then I think you'll have some gadget plays. Of course, you know, you can get Lucas involved in the pass game at slots and things like that. But, man, I mean, that was interesting to hear because I was wondering how they were going to use all these guys. It sounds like it's only going to be 2 to 3. And I think the freshman has earned his way into the top probably 2, let alone 3.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You're absolutely right. You know, when I saw that comment too, and I was like, ooh. And so I started doing a little bit more digging around it. And based on the comments I've been reading, based on the tea leaves that so this is Michael's interpretation of what the coaches have been saying. I feel like I think Roydell has solidified himself as at least the first back that's taken a snap against
Bama. You're right. Yeah.
I think Roydell's that. I think Chroma's number 2.
Yeah.
And then I think it's a little trickiness between Sawchuk and Jaylen Lucas because obviously they want to use Jaylen Lucas for all the gadget stuff, you know, the slot stuff, bring him in the H-back, have him running back screens, all like that stuff. But I think Gavin Sawchuk is probably more so ahead for that third slot, which is wild because they literally went out of their way to go get him. And
I was going to say, I've seen some talk about him being like a third down back.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess if it's third and short, why not run Roydell, kind of the bigger power back? I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see how they distribute those snaps, but it kind of did catch me off guard a little bit there to know that they're probably not going to use the depth of that room. Now, in other news, that's it for fall camp. Michael, we do have some clarity on probably the number one question surrounding game one for the entire offseason. That is Bama officially names Ty Simpson as the starter at quarterback there. This is not a surprise. This is what we expected all offseason. And we're not going to dive into Ty Simpson because we're getting ready to do our Bama preview literally next week. We're going to try to get it out real early for you guys. I have already started diving into him. But, man, I think this is what you wanted, right? You got a fourth-year junior, so he's been around the program for a while. But it's a guy who's only played 188 total snaps across 3 years. And he is not – you know, when I started doing some deep dive on him, man, most of his experience has come against FCS or G5 teams.
Yep.
He's never played meaningful minutes. I looked at last year. He came in the Wisconsin game. It was 42-10. In the LSU game, he came in at 35-6 and handed it off. Didn't even throw an attempt.
Right.
So he's never really, I think I also looked it up against Power 4 defenses. He's never thrown the ball more than 4 to 5 times in 3 years. So, I mean, this is what you wanted, man. You wanted a brand new quarterback coming in, making his very first start, which, interesting stat, I hope I don't quote this wrong, This is the first Alabama quarterback to make his first start on the road since 2004 in 21 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. And also, I think it's Alabama's first true road game, scheduled road game to start the season since 2000. So, in 25 years. So, man, you got a young guy making his first, well, he's not young, but you got an inexperienced guy making his first start in a sold out Doak Campbell Stadium against a defense that's known for confusing quarterbacks. This is what you wanted. It's not to say Ty Simpson can't be good,
right?
And they're probably going to lean on the run game there, which Tony White's defense is built to stop. But yeah, man, this is kind of what you wanted. So this is something that you can leverage for your advantage. But now we have clarity on who their starter is going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last season Mercer was the game he played the most, probably quarterbacky, and he had 10 attempts, 5 completions, 71 yards. You know, other than that, you go back to 23. He came in, did some spot duty there. He did come in and help them solidify that win against USF when they were down at halftime. Remember that? Nick Saban about lost his ever loving mind. And so you got this really inexperienced kid that's coming in, and you have to wonder, you know, when you're at Alabama and you've sat behind, you know, Jalen Milroe, you sat behind Bryce Young, like you haven't been able to beat out those guys, and you're only winning now because the guys behind you are like literally true freshmen, what type of, is this finally the downgrade that Alabama's seeing at quarterback? And if so, how can Tony White and that defense, you know, try to confuse the heck out of him, since this is going to be like meaningful on the road, sold out, ravenous Doak Campbell Stadium, brand new, right? Like, how is he going to handle that pressure?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully for him, not for us, but for him, he's got a load of talent around
him.
He's got a great receiving core. But, you know, again, we're going to break all this down in the Bama preview. I got some thoughts on Ty Simpson there from some film I've watched. But, yeah, man, I think this is kind of what you wanted. And if you're Tony White, if it were me, I'm taking the run game away as best I can, and I'm going to make him throw to beat me. Right. And so, again, stay tuned for that Bama preview. We're going to get into all this. But that is something that popped up this week that is – it just provided clarity, right? No surprise there. And so, Michael, I just want to spend about 30 seconds talking about this commitment that we just got right before we got on the show. So I didn't have time to get any slides or film or anything ready. Isaiah Williams, 4-star linebacker, top 3 linebacker in the 247 composite and Rivals industry for the 2026 class. So this is he's a good player, man.
Yeah.
This is also his second time committing to Florida State and his 6th overall commitment. So we're, you know, it's kind of like my wife deciding where we're going for dinner. Right. It just don't really know where they want to end up. So I don't want to get too excited about this. I wouldn't hold your breath. I'm probably not going to get excited till this kid gets on campus. And even then, I'm going to be a little bit nervous at that point. So, but it is a good commitment. It is a big commitment for Florida State. Flip him from Ole Miss, but you know, buckle up for this one, and I wouldn't hold my breath over it.
Yeah. You know, my theory, Jesse. I don't trust these kids until they've signed the dotted line and they've made it to campus and they've started, you know, whatever, spring or summer, depending on when they enroll. But yeah, this is a big time commitment. You know, he had the knee surgery injury there, and Mike Norvell stayed on him, kept telling him, hey, you rehab that knee, you get it better. I'm going to coach you one day. And he said that, you know, that was the most consistent relationship even after the injury that he had. So that's why he's flipping back. We'll see if it stays.
Yeah.
Somebody else comes with a better offer or whatever it may be. But right now, you know, kudos to that staff for getting him back in the fold.
Yeah, I mean, you hope it stays, because we haven't had a linebacker commit like that in except for the time we had him before.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we have it again. So with that being said, recruiting is just crazy, man. It really
ridiculous.
Is. And so let's go ahead and transition to talking about the defense here. We're going to start in the trenches with the defensive line. And because I feel like there's just so much to talk about between the two, we're going to separate defensive tackles from the defensive end here. When you talk about the defensive line room, man, there are some really good pieces here. I wouldn't necessarily call this a special group. And when I talk about special, I mean like top 10 in the country, but it is a very solid group. You know, you got Daryl Jackson there, who has the potential to be dominant. Kevin Wynn sounds like a freak for a freshman. Everyone else is kind of unknown. There's not a lot of experience behind Daryl Jackson, but if you have a few of these players hit, it could be a pretty decently deep and productive room, especially if you're running mostly one defensive tackle at a time. And so I think we should start at the top there with Daryl Jackson, the veteran leader. Look, man, this staff put the weight of this defense on his back. They brought him out of the portal. They talked about how he was their biggest commit and all that stuff. And so, he's got to perform this year if you want to get where you want to go. Now, they've talked about how he's kind of stepped into that leadership role. He's played all along the defensive front, and so he's really coming into his own, so excited to see that. But, I mean, when you're a redshirt senior, 6'5", 337, with almost 1,200 snaps of experience, you got to perform, man. This is right. Your year. This is your money year. And so you look at a guy here, again, 26 career starts, ton of experience. He's at a 70-plus PFF grade in his last two full seasons. Obviously, you know, he had to sit out there in 23. He did lead FSU in pressures and stops last year. Needs to clean up the tackling some. 21.4% missed tackle percentage. But other than that, man, Daryl Jackson's a guy that you just really want to see have a big year, because that means your defense is probably going to have a good year too.
Well, absolutely. You want the anchor of your defense, the person that they said, that the coaching staff said the biggest recruiting win was to get him back. This is an NFL, you know, top four round draft pick right here. And so you want him to come back. We want to hear about the Daryl Jackson, where in 23, they said that times they had to keep him from practicing because he was tearing up that offensive line. Well, now we know that offensive line was pretty bad, but still you want that type of guy. And last year when he came into the season, it was just such a slow start. You'd see flashes of it, but not as much. And then towards the end of the season, you started to see it more consistently. Yeah. That's what we need this year. We need that consistency right at the line. He's going to see the bulk of the snaps at D-tackle, especially when they're at that three-man front. Sometimes when they switch over to a four-man front, you know, he'll have a help out there. But he's going to be the primary guy that they're really leaning on this season.
Yeah, I honestly think the dummies gave the offensive line trouble last year. It was blowing up blocks. But continuing down the line here, Daniel Lyons is a guy that's been working his way back from injury in spring. We heard him talk about this the other day where, you know, he's not quite fully ready yet, but he's working his way back. And that's interesting, man, because this was pretty much your assumed D-tackle number two. So hopefully he's ready to go by the Alabama game. Look, he had some really good moments last year.
Yeah.
He also had some not so great moments last year, but again, he's got an above average run defense grade. He had three sacks last year, you know, 6'4", 302. He's one of your bigger body defensive tackles. He's played over 500 snaps. He's, you know, pretty much by far your second most experienced defensive tackle of the group, which he doubled that experience last year. You're going to need him. You know, you're going to need him to take on a larger role. And you know, I guess it's got to do with the injury, man, but you just really haven't heard a whole lot out of camp from Daniel Lyons yet, but you need him this year.
Yeah, you really do. This is a step up year. Redshirt junior, like he's, you know, he was brought in. He was somebody that they looked at early on thinking that this guy could make a contribution. And he just kind of, again, showed small flashes here or there. This is the year that he needs to actually put it all together on the field. Yeah. This is a year where he needs to find his consistency and force the coaches to play him a lot more than they have in the past.
Yeah, and also if something were to happen to Daryl Jackson, knock on wood,
he's
your next up guy.
You're right.
You really want to start hearing some better things about him. But continuing down the list here, you have KJ Sampson, a guy who hasn't played a whole lot, only 166 snaps, not the greatest PFF grade there, not a whole lot of stats to talk about. But he's a big body defensive tackle that is built like a nose, 6'3", 318 pounds there. They've called him twitchy. They said he can actually move pretty well for his size. Played 115 snaps last year and did start to see the field a little bit more towards the end of the season when they went youth movement. Look, he's going to have some opportunities to get snaps this year, and I hope he's up for the challenge. You know, there's not a lot to talk about with his past, but we've heard good things in camp, and you're going to need him this season for depth concerns. He's probably your D-tackle number three, if not Kevin Wynn. Maybe has jumped him in the rotation there, depending on where Daniel Lyons is. But, man, you're going to need KJ this year.
Yeah, you're going to need him to step up, and he's going to be big as far as just helping the people coming from behind him. Obviously, he understands the program. He's been in it for a bit. This will be his third year as a redshirt sophomore. You know, again, as we can say with most of these guys, except for the freshmen, they've showed small flashes of when they can be pretty decent. It's the consistency over and over again. I know that sounds like a broken record, but that's what it is. It really is a consistency. Can he put it together when he's given the opportunity to get on the field? And against, you know, East Texas A&M and Kent State, he's going to find a lot of opportunities to get on the field. He's got to put together some decent film for the coaches and forcing them to play him more.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to, unless it's an injury situation, I don't think you're going to need him to be a really big part of this defense, but you need him to fill his role well. And I think that would be big this season. Now, the one that might jump all of these other guys is Kevin Wynn. You know, again, back to the whole, we're really excited about freshmen here, man. I can't wait to see Kevin Wynn. Now, I wrote an article before camp even started that was talking about three freshmen who could be big contributors in 2025. And Kevin Wynn was on that list. Strong, hardworking freshman. He's already 6'2", 330 pounds. He's going to play a lot. Now, again, there's not a lot to talk about because he's still a true freshman. Yeah. But, man, it sounds like, again, remember, this was one of the highest-rated defensive tackle commits you've gotten in almost the last decade. So, like we've talked about before, maybe he's not your starter. Maybe he's not your number two. At least maybe not for the Bama game. I think he'll get a lot of reps in those other two games after that. But I could see going down, down later in the schedule. Man, he's going to be a big part of this defense. And if you can get him to give you depth as a true freshman, man, that's exciting for the future.
Well, I've been curious about what Tony White's philosophy is going to be. You know, remember, you know, under Adam Fuller, they were massive fans of the rotation, right?
Yeah.
Of bringing these guys in at even in critical down so that they get the rotation, because the idea was that they wanted to wear that offensive line down, that in the fourth quarter, that offensive line is incredibly tired, but those defensive linemen are fresh and they're still attacking, right? I'm curious. And the reason why I'm curious is because if they still have that philosophy, that mentality, well, a guy like Kevin Wynn becomes massively important for you, right?
Yep.
Because that means you're going to be putting this freshman in and sometimes critical downs to spell the starter in the second and the second lineup there. And if he's in there, then maybe he, you know, gets some good rep. I would love to see him get, I don't know, 4 to 5 snaps against Bama just to see what he is like at this raw stage against that well of development of an offensive line and SEC talent. I'd love to see that, because then that'll give us a barometer about what we can expect from him moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. It's good to gauge yourself against the best of the best. You know what I mean? And I think that would be big. But like you said, I think if nothing else, man, if he can just provide you some depth and just in that first year, it would be big for this defense. And then I think later on, man, I mean, you never know what could happen with the guy. I mean, he's this talented already and they keep talking about his motor and everything, he might be one of those guys that you just can't keep off the field.
Right.
So to round out the room here, I'm going to go ahead and group these last two together. Gotcha. Tylan Coleman, productive JUCO player, top five JUCO player, top five JUCO defensive lineman by Rivals when he came to Florida State this past year, 6'4", 309. He had 30 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, and 1.5 sacks in JUCO. You know, man, the funny thing about when I talk about Tylan Coleman here is people act like this was a pretty good get, right? A productive JUCO player, one of the top JUCO players in the country coming out last year. He's got size at 6'4", 309. Haven't heard anything about him. That maybe is a little concerning for me. And the reason I say that is because we have a history of JUCO players maybe not doing so well, right? You just haven't really hit on some JUCO players as of late. So hopefully, you know, if nothing else, he provides some depth. It's just kind of weird that we haven't heard anything about him yet. And then the other one here is Jamori Flagg, young, big body defensive tackle with basically no experience.
Right.
I think those 10 snaps probably came against Charleston Southern last year. So you'll probably see him get probably about the same amount of snaps against East Texas A&M this year. I don't really expect much out of him other than development, but at least hopefully you can get a few snaps out of Tylan Coleman.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I hope we didn't pay a lot of money for that, because
you're
right. We've heard zilch, zero, nada, quiet. You know, no one is speaking about Coleman. And yet it was hailed as this really big get, you know, from the Jew. You know, and you're right too. Remember if I believe correctly, we went out and got a wide receiver from the JUCO ranks a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he was 6'7". Well, I was about to say, we got the one this year, Jordan Scott. He was the Johnny
Wilson
2.0. And didn't even make it past the spring.
Didn't even make it
past. Locked up by a freshman.
Exactly. And he had to basically leave. And so, again, in Florida State's history, we've not done well with the JUCO ranks. We've just not. We've struggled with that rank. And so, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens, you know.
Yeah.
Could this be another Grady Kelly situation where, you know, we're like, oh my gosh, it's Braden Fisk, you know, 2.0. And then really every time Grady got in, he looked like he was getting graded over.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And so now we're going to move to the outside with defensive ends here. And, you know, it's funny you talk about when you talk about Braden Fisk here, I'm actually going to start with maybe a little bit of a different name here instead of James Williams, the name that's on the top of everybody's list. Man, that's Deontay McCray, 6'4", 287 pounds. And the reason I start with him, man, is I'm not saying he's going to be like Braden Fisk, right? But I'm kind of getting Braden Fisk vibes as far as the type of player that you went out and got, right? Not so much a Grady Kelly, more of a Braden Fisk. And the reason I say that is because, you know, Braden Fisk was a highly productive guy just at a lower level. And so you wanted to see him be able to translate that over to the power four. Now, we didn't see that from Grady Kelly, but he didn't have the production history that a Fisk or Deontay McCray had. And I mean, this is a versatile guy already with the size to play defensive tackle. He's talked about how he's played all three positions along the defensive line. You know, Michael, I was trying to think of it the other day, a comparison that he reminds me of. It's kind of like Dennis Briggs. You know, he's Deontay's 6'4", 287. Dennis Briggs was 6'4", 275. Remember, he started at end. They moved him inside for depth issues. And so he could kind of do either or. I think that kind of gives me that kind of comparison there. But again, like I said, man, this is the type of productive guy that we said in the offseason that we wanted to see Florida State go get. Don't go get this potential. Go get guys who have produced. And that's exactly what you get in Deontay McCray. Now, I know that Conference USA is nothing even remotely close to the Power Four. I get that. Hear me say that first. But his history is impressive. Among Conference USA defensive ends last year in 2024, Deontay McCray was fifth in PFF grade, second in run defense grade, first in tackle grade, led the conference in solo tackles, top 10 in assists, second lowest missed tackle percentage, second in stops, ninth in pass rush production. He was third in FBS and run play tackles nationally, top 20 in the FBS and run play tackle assists nationally, 26th in stops, and top 10 in the FBS in tackle grade. You want a proven transfer from the lower level?
Yeah.
Man, this is it. And so it's just, can he translate to that power four level? And I'll kick it back to you on this. I will at least say when I went back and look at his grades last year at Western Kentucky, he did play against Alabama and Boston College and had a above average grade of 63.6 against Bama and a good grade of 68.7 against Boston College. So that gives me hope there as well. But man, this is a versatile guy with a heck of a history.
Yeah, you know, my hope is that he is, you know, trending either on, you know, the opposite side of James Williams there, and that he can be a player that, I keep using this word consistency, but that's really what I want to see out of this defensive line. Anyone and everyone, just consistent motor, consistent energy, able to beat the tackle, to beat the guard, to beat the center, to get to the backfield, to take down, to cause pressure. Can he be that person? Now, you're right. He had good experience against Alabama. He had good experience against who was the other school?
Boston College.
He had good experience there. And so you would think that he would translate very well to playing consistent Power Four programs as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do this season. He was a name that we had talked about several times this offseason as needing to step up. And so hopefully he's able to do that and provide that, maybe lock down that other side of that defensive inside.
Yeah, I mean, but this is the guy, like I said, man, this is just what you wanted to see. No fluff and rankings and potential. This is a stats guy, right? He's put it on the field. But the one guy that we're most excited about, probably from a potential standpoint, is James Williams. Comes over from Nebraska with Tony White, with T. Knighton on the defensive line. They have a very close relationship. They've talked about that before. 6'6", 259 pounds. He's got size. He's got length. And, you know, when you talk about his history, obviously we know at Nebraska there, he was not a full-time starter. He was used as a package player, more of a go-get-the-quarterback, sack artist type of guy. 14 tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss, 5 sacks last year at Nebraska. So, man, I mean, he's got a good productive history. He's only played 236 snaps, so there's not a whole lot of experience there. 75.4 PFF grade last year, which was great. But when you look at what he was able to do, man, number one in the entire country in pass rush production. Oof. In the Power Four, excuse me, number one in the Power Four in pass. So he was literally the most productive pass rusher in the Power Four last year when you break it down on a workload basis. So that's really exciting to see. He had 31 pressures and 5 sacks, which would have led Florida State last year. Even though he was a package player, he still would have led, by the way. Patrick Payton's now a backup at LSU.
Backup? Look at him.
And Luke Kromenhawk is second or third string at Mississippi State. So, you know, the outgoing is not always bad.
Mm.
Now, of his 236 snaps, only 46 of those were in run defense. So that's the biggest question this year, man. Can he be an effective run defender? Now, we just heard them talk about, we heard Tony White talk about James Williams. He has improved his hand usage, the way he's able to shed defenders and work in that run game. And I also think it helps he's bulked up about 10 to 12 pounds, which is something he talked about he worked at this offseason. So you already know what he can do in the pass rush game, man. He can be a really high level defender for you if he can just step up that run defense. But man, I got high hopes for James Williams at 25.
Well, I'm thinking here that, you know, when somebody is a package player, they're a pass rush specialist, they're a run blocking specialist, they're used a lot on packages when the situation calls for it. Well, when you're going to move from a package player to a full-time player, you have to believe as coaches that he has more than just whatever skill set you were leveraging for in the package or the special plays. Secondarily, what it leads me to believe is in Tony White's creative 3-3-5 defense, where you can change the front a lot of times, he's not always going to be the defensive end with his hand in the dirt, right?
Yeah.
Or two technique, three technique, whatever you want to call it. That they might pull him up, right? Have him stand up. You got two guys with hand in the dirt. You know, he's standing up, the linebacker standing up, and then you do some kind of stunt, some kind of twist action where, you know, the linebacker goes inside to the B gap and he's coming out to the C gap, right? You're gonna try to make sure that package type player who's now playing the majority of downs and majority of snaps has the ability to still use his pass rushing special skills just on more downs, because you're going to run stunts and different things like that to try to free him up to get him one-on-one on a tackle or on a guard there. And so my hope is that he doesn't just flash consistency, that's all they need, but also that they coaches leverage him really well to use his skill set as they try to, you know, make him a more consistent down player for this defensive line.
Yeah, and I mean, you'll see him probably line up at the jack position as well. Yep. And I mean, if you think about it, you know, with five sacks and 236 snaps and you know, a chunk of those were run defense, man, if this is the guy that can go out and get you 10, 12 sacks this year, that's going to be big for the defense.
Yep.
I mean, it would be huge if he can do that. So going next to the other side of the line, who I think is going to be your starter, probably opposite of James Williams in game one, if he's, you know, a full go, is Jason Jenkins. It's good to hear he's back available. Was obviously, you know, when you brought him in, he was a projected starter from day one. A guy who was buried on a deep defensive line last year at Tennessee. And so when you look at the stats of only 9 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, and 2 sacks, well, that there wasn't a whole lot of workload for him to get it in, right? So 6'6", 276, twitchy defender that we've heard Tony White talk about, 75.5 PFF grade. So he graded out very well in the little bit of snaps that he did get.
Yeah.
But the thing was, man, again, this is a guy that we've talked about before where Tennessee fans, you know, most players trash their transfers on the way out the door. That wasn't the case with Jason Jenkins. Everybody's like, he's pretty good. He just got buried. And you could see where, looking up his game log towards the end of the season, he started to see a lot more workload towards the end of Tennessee's season last year. He got double-digit snaps in the final 9 games, including their playoff game.
Yeah.
So, and the thing that I like about him here is he's well-rounded, 75.5 PFF, 72 in the run game, and 75.2 in the pass rush. So he's a well-rounded defender with great size. It's just like we talked about with James Williams. This is a guy who's not been a full-time starter.
Right.
And if he's healthy for you, it's probably going to be asked to be a full-time starter. So how does he transition into that role? He's a guy, I'm probably more excited about the upside of James Williams as far as the pass rush specialist goes. But I think Jason Jenkins is probably your all kind of better rounded defender here.
Right.
And so can he be healthy and can he handle that full-time starter role? That's going to be the big question. But I mean, this is a guy's got a really good high floor and a potentially high ceiling.
Well, I think it's so crazy that you came into the season based on what we had heard that this guy probably wasn't, you know, Miami might have been a maybe, but maybe even later in the season.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's back right now out on the field and they're saying that, like, they're anticipating that he's getting week one snaps against Alabama, like,
yeah,
bring it on. I mean, this was a guy you went out and got, went out, you paid probably quite a good bit of money for. So you want him to be able to show up there, moving him to the full time. Again, not be, I want to make sure I'm clear about this. Just because somebody wasn't full-time in another place or was a specialist in another place doesn't mean they don't have full-time snap capability. Right. It just meant that they probably had somebody in front of them that was maybe a little bit better, a little bit more experienced, but they were good enough to get special packages. They were good enough to be on critical downs. That's probably what you saw with, especially James Williams, now that you've seen Jay Zinkins. I think it would be incredible because, I mean, if you've seen that kid, I watched some tape on him at Tennessee. My goodness. If he can become, again, what I'm going to say, more consistent, he could be a game changer for us.
Yeah. I mean, they obviously trusted him to play in the playoff game.
That's right.
I don't know if that was after they had already that playoff game didn't go so well. Yeah, exactly. But no, man, that's a guy that I'm excited about, right? That you got some pieces on this defensive line. I feel like, if they can consistently put on in that starter role, man, you got some good pieces here. Like, I'm thinking you're probably going to be James Williams, Daryl Jackson, and Jason Jenkins. And I really like that setup there. But another guy we're going to talk about here that this coaching staff really likes, the guy that is another one that's in position for that jack spot there is Diamante Diggs, Coastal Carolina transfer. Look, he's another productive G5 player, 34 tackles, 6.5 tackles for loss, 5 sacks there at Coastal Carolina. 6'5", 250. So he's got size. And I know most of that, he had the club on his hand last year too with a hand injury. And they said when he took it off, he played a lot better. But, man, I mean, he's got almost 900 snaps of experience throughout his college career. So he's a guy that's done it on the field. Now, that was not all at Coastal Carolina. He was at Youngstown State before that. But, again, man, 65.2 PFF grade last year, 77.9 tackle grade, excellent tackle grade there. 80 PFF grade at Youngstown in 2023, 12 pressures, 5 sacks, and only 147 pass rush snaps. So, again, like we talked about with the other guys, can this translate to the Power 4? That's the main question. But, man, I mean, he's got experience and he's got size and his coaching staff really likes him. I think if he can at least be your kind of Byron Turner Jr., right? Be that defensive end number two and be consistent at it. And that's all I think you need from him this year. But this is a guy that's got some upside to him.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a guy that you're looking at doing what they used to do with James William and Jay Singens, being a specialist, coming in on certain pass rushing downs, coming in maybe potentially on a big goal line stand, stuff like that, stuff that you can leverage this guy for to use him. And as he creates more of those consistency of snaps and opportunities to see him step up more and be the kind of player that they're hoping him to be, why they brought him in.
Yeah, and I think to round out the room here, obviously you got Jaden Jones is one to watch. There's not much in the stat line. There's not much in the snap line. He hasn't done a whole lot in college, but he's got great size, 6'5", 257, was a top 5 JUCO defensive lineman in 2023. So he's had a lot of the hype. He just hasn't been able to play due to injury. But, we've heard so much good stuff come out of camp. Now, we've also heard there's been some up and down. So I don't know how much he's going to contribute, but hopefully if he stays healthy, he can at least be a good depth and rotational piece for you. You obviously got the Desir twins, which we hinted at earlier on, 4- and 3-star freshmen here. Daryl is 6'5", 262, and Mandrill is 6'4", 262. So they got size here. Excited to see those guys get into the rotation. Some of the names who are talented freshmen that we really haven't heard a whole lot here, LaJesse Harold, Tylon Lee, and Grant Fielder. So hopefully those guys can get some snaps, and maybe some of those cupcake games. But overall, man, I think with the defensive end room, not a lot of proven players in here. But, man, you got a lot of guys who have done it in spurts. And as long as they can do it consistently on the field in 2025, I like this defensive end group as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think this is a group that can be, I'll reserve the word special, but they can do something unique this season. They can be dominant. Florida State sack numbers were an all-time atrocious thing to look at last season.
Yeah.
Just as bad as their interceptions. I mean, you brought in one guy who had just as many interceptions as your whole team had. Well, you can look at the sack numbers, and they were just absolutely terrible. So you're not only are you looking for Daryl Jackson to take up the bulk of that offensive line's focus so that it gives you one-on-one on the outside for Jason Jenkins, for James Williams, for Diamante Diggs, for those guys to be able to get in the background, get in the backfield, get the quarterback down, create some chaos back there, and allow this defense to actually live up to its potential.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a really important position in this defense, so you're going to need them to come through. And like you said, I have no doubt that if they hit, they can be upper tier of the ACC. Yep. And so, Michael, let's talk about a position group that it's going to feel weird to talk about this position group because we haven't had a lot of nice things to say recently about this position group, but this year we feel pretty good about it, and that is linebackers, right? You got probably one of the best linebacker rooms that you've had in a while. Now, 23's group was very solid, right? But you just feel a lot, you feel like you're in a pretty good place here. And, you know, it's funny when I heard Tony White in his last press conference, you know, you hear him talk about a lot of the other position groups and it's, well, this guy's doing good, this guy's not doing so good. But when he talks about these linebackers, man, it's pretty much like, look, I like what I see across the board. And they're all have been playing hard, flying around, making plays. And so that in itself is encouraging to hear. I'm not going to judge Blake off his little three-second clip that didn't go so well for him there. But, man, you start at the top with Elijah Herring here. Transfer comes in. You know, this is your experienced veteran, man. 22 starts, over 1,400 snaps of experience. He led Tennessee in tackles in 2023 with 80 that year. He was fourth in tackles in Memphis last year, despite missing two games with 60 tackles. Also had 7.5 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, 4 PBUs, 6'2", 231. He's kind of a thick, big body linebacker as well. So, man, just excited to have a veteran guy that knows what he's doing in the middle of this defense. Very productive, 86 run grade, which is excellent, 35 stops, 36 in 2023. My concern is he's not so great in coverage, right? Yeah. Gave up 80% reception percentage the past 2 years, had pretty bad PFF coverage grades. But this is a guy I think that reminds me of Tatum Bethune, right? I expect a solid year, good run defender, hard-nosed linebacker. Maybe you don't want to get him exposed in coverage, but you know, I really like what he brings to the middle of your defense.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be big for that defensive line to make sure that they're getting back there creating havoc, you know, especially if these linebackers are not the best in coverage. If Elijah Herring struggles a little bit there, then we want to make sure that defensive line is getting the quarterback off his platform, off his launch pattern to be able to throw the ball there. But, you know, other than that, yeah, I mean, 1,400 snaps, you got an experience back there. You got somebody who deeply cares. Is going to be in the right place, hopefully. Like that, you know, I've said that to you so many times. I just need the linebackers to be in the right place. I need them to thud. I need them to hit hard and to take that step. And so that's the hope for Elijah Herring. I hope he can be that kind of linebacker.
Yeah, I agree. And when you talk about the other experienced linebacker in the room, it's Stephon Thompson. But as one of the most experienced guys in the room, he's also the hardest to figure out, right?
Exactly.
6-year player who has been under Tony White almost his whole career. So he has to know this defense inside and out. He started 7 games at Syracuse as a freshman in 2020, all 12 games in 2021. He did miss 2022. I believe that was from an injury. He did stay at Syracuse in 2023, but then followed Tony White to Nebraska in 2024. But at 2023 at Syracuse, when he stayed not under Tony White, he did not start, but he did play over 400 snaps. But then when he transfers to Nebraska, he only started 1 game and played 175 snaps. Now, I don't know if that's because he had some lingering injury issues. Maybe he just didn't beat out the other linebackers that Nebraska had there. It's I don't know that well enough to give you an answer there. But, man, he's had 70-plus PFF grades in every season. He's one of the best tacklers I've ever seen. 0 missed tackles the past 2 seasons. Solid coverage grades. I think the biggest thing with him, man, is he healthy? Why did he not get that much playing time at Nebraska when he followed Tony White to another stop? You know, was it depth? Was it health? Was it good? Was it talent? I don't know, but that's the question I'm asking for this year because, man, when he's been good, he's been good. I just don't know what to expect from him, but he's a veteran guy who knows this defense inside and out.
Yeah. Well, it's just interesting. Like, who is Stephon Thompson? Like, is he going to be the guy that they went out and got? And they went out and got him for a reason. You know, maybe they needed veteran presence in the linebacking. They needed somebody who knows his defense well, especially from the linebacker position. But yeah, it's been quiet. You haven't heard much about him in this offseason and this preseason camp. So you just wonder, you know, is he going to be a factor in this? You would have to assume so. But if not, then I'm curious to see what happens with him. If he turns out to be, you know, just that really consistent linebacker who's showing up, or does he just fade into the background?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard him mention a few times that he's done some good things, but you know, again, is it going to be good enough to be a starter? Because I think that's kind of what you brought him here for.
Right.
Now, one of the other names here, one of the returning potential starters, one of the few returning potential starters is Omar Graham Jr. Look, had an up and down 2024 season. After that Georgia Tech game, we were ready to leave his butt in Ireland. But then, you know, he had a few bad games throughout the season. But, man, by the end of the season, he was one of your better linebackers. Started 8 games last year, has almost 700 career snaps of experience. PFF grades are kind of mixed there. but he's gotten better every single year.
Right.
You know, again, towards the end of the season, man, he started playing really well, and it was big when they went and got him out of the portal. So my question for him is, you know, can you build on top of that, right? Can you build on that experience? And even if you're not a starter, can you be that serviceable second tier linebacker, or can you step up and build on top of last year and be a starter? Because we've seen the ups and downs, but we've seen the ups, and the ups are pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, like you said, prior to last season, even in 23, you're like, bro, why is this kid on the field? Well, he has no idea what he's doing. And then last year, I won't say what I said during the Georgia Tech game, but it was not nice for him. Yeah. And then as the year went on, he was one of the few bright spots of that team last year. You start seeing him play with more consistency. He was attacking the hole with more confidence. He was thudding. I mean, he was playing with reckless abandon, which is what you want to see in a linebacker. And so you hope that he can put it together from the beginning of the season and continue that run for him.
Yeah, man. And then two of the other ones here that I think do definitely have a potential to get in on this year, that is Blake Nicholson, as we mentioned, a.k.a. Osmane Kroma's son, for the time being, until he gets a get-back hit on him.
Exactly.
He's going to have to lay him out to get out from under that one time. But tied for second on the team in tackles last year. I know everybody seems to be writing Blake off after his one little clip of getting run over by a freshman running back, and I get it didn't look good. But, man, again, this was a guy who was tied for second in tackles last year, only three missed tackles, quadrupled his experience last year. You know, his grades aren't great, but this was a really, really highly touted recruit who needs to put it all together, man. It is time for Blake Nicholson to be the guy that we think he can be. He's an athletic linebacker who's just kind of been inconsistent, and so you just want to see him put it together. And then I think another guy that you want to be able to count on this year is Deuce Crier. He was playing about 35 snaps per game last year before he got hurt, which is significant. Great energy, great teammate is what we've always heard from Deuce Crier. You know, this is the guy that like comes out before the game and plays catch with kids when he was hurt. Man, it's just, you can't ask for a better team guy than Deuce Crier. But he's also good on the field. He has shown flashes for an undersized linebacker, which has really always been the only knock on Deuce Crier, was he's a little bit undersized and maybe not the fastest guy. But if he can stay healthy, I think just like Blake Nicholson, man, he can be a big part of this defense. And we've heard a lot of positive in camp so far.
Yeah, look, I think between the two of them, again, consistency, they need to be able to put it together on the field. You know, with Blake, I've been wondering if Blake might, because of his pass coverage prowesses, you know, he's really good in the pass coverage, if they might try him out at that, like, really deep, you know, rover safety kind of look, because that's kind of the body type you want there, who can hit, but he can also cover and pass. Yeah. I thought that they might that, but I haven't heard much about that. So, you know, obviously he's going to be on that depth of the linebacker there. And of course, Juice. Yeah. Juice could be a major player in this defense this year. If he can stay healthy, if he can, if the flashes he showed last year become more, more prominent, more consistent in his play, I think he could be a big time for Florida State this season.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I love about Juice that you talked about, just being in the right spot, the one thing we've always heard about Juice is his limitations are athletically.
Right.
But as far as knowing the defense, knowing where to line up, you know, being in the right spot at the right time, that's what we've always heard about Juice that he's really excelled at. And, you know, wasn't he the one that flirted with the portal, but then saw this defense and was like, yeah, I want to be a part of that.
That's right.
So rounding out the room here, you have the young guy, Caleb LaValle, comes over from North Carolina, redshirt sophomore. So he's got 2 years of college development. But again, he's a young guy in an experienced group. Only played 127 snaps, and 65 of that came in North Carolina's bowl game last year. But Michael, he went off in that bowl game. 9 tackles, 1 TFL, 5 stops, 76 PFF grade. He only played double-digit snaps in one other game, and that was just 10 at UVA. Right. So don't really know what to expect from LaValle there, but, man, if you could get what you got from him in that bowl game, man, I think he's more of a future plan. Obviously, his brother just committed here as well.
Right.
But really, really high upside guy there. And then you have Ethan Pritchard, Jaden Parrish, A.J. Cottrell, and Gav Holman. You know, we've heard some things them talked about in camp as being contributors. I don't know that they're going to be a big part of the plan this year, but you've heard some good things. But, man, I think overall with this linebacker group, you got a good mix of veteran guys and different skill sets, and I'm really excited to see what they can do this year.
Listen, this linebacker group hasn't been anything to write home about since 23, and before that, there wasn't really much to write home about. So we've only had, you know, in the last maybe 5 to 8 years, one really good linebacker core group. I'm actually presently excited about this linebacker group. Usually I go in the season, you know, last year, remember what we said is that In a 4-2-5, you don't have to worry about the linebacker because they're that bad, right?
Yeah. Well, yep.
In a 3-3-5, the linebackers become all the more important because you're leveraging them all over the field, on the line, in the passing game. And so I'm actually pleasantly looking forward to seeing how this linebacker play shakes out this year. And I think they got a, I think they have a decent group that can take a next step if they put the work in and get it done.
Yeah, I think, like you said, man, outside of 23, this is probably the best you felt coming into the season at the, about the linebacker group in some years. And so we're going to go back here and we're going to talk about these guys in the DB room. Now, this is one area where, Michael, I feel pretty good about one or two of these guys, and the rest, we just don't even know who's going to start. There's this is probably the, I would almost define this position group as like the highest upside and also the biggest question mark, because you love the talent that you have. You love the pieces that you have. We just don't even know who's going to be playing right now. Some that aren't hitting like we've talked about, and some young guys that might be into playing some more than the veteran guys. So I think we should start with the one consistent that we know, right? And that is Jeremiah. We now have a name change. It is official. Jerry Wilson.
Come on, Jerry.
Jerry, I like it, man. This kid is just so unique, right? Man, he's just a fun guy to watch and be around. But you look at this guy, man, he is more than just a fun guy to be around. Unless you're a wide receiver, then he's probably not fun to be around, because he was a top five player in the portal, the number one cornerback per On3. He has experience in Tony White's defense from when he played under him at Syracuse. Veteran presence at the position, 13 starts, over 1,000 snaps of experience. He had a breakout season at Houston last year. And so among power four corners in last season in 2024, he was a top 10 graded cornerback, top five in zone coverage, seventh in overall coverage grade, tied for third in interceptions by a power four corner, top 20 in lowest completion percent allowed at 44.7. He's a great team guy, great energy, hard worker, and we've heard nothing but good coming out of camp. Man, this is the guy that I hope the hype equals the play on the field, because if it is, he's just going to be massive for your defense to lock down one corner of that secondary.
Well, I mean, man, every defensive coordinator dreams about having a corner that can literally lock one half of the field up. And this is your guy. I mean, you went out and got this guy. You went out and probably paid really good money for this guy. And he's come in, and he's been everything you've hoped. Every report we get out of practice, he's been a leader. He's challenged guys. He makes guys better. He makes guys think differently. He's funny. I mean, everything. And plus the fact that he brings in the same amount of interceptions himself. I don't know how many times I have to say this.
Yeah.
He brings in the same amount of interceptions himself from last season than your whole DB room brought in last season. Okay.
That whole defense.
Your whole defense. Okay. And so I think Jerry Wilson is going to be big time for Florida State. I think you're putting this guy on your against the your opponent's best wide receiver, and you're just letting him shut him down. Doesn't mean he's going to have complete shutdown. You know, cornerback does. But whoever he's playing across, it ain't going to get a lot of look, right? Which is going to allow you to leave him on an island, free up some safety work to go over to the other guys or other sides, help out there, blitzing, all those things. Man, that's what a prime corner can do for you. And I'm excited to see what Jerry's got for us this season.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't need him to necessarily be Jalen Ramsey. But, like, if you could just be AZ, then I think you'd be consistent on the outside there. You know, the thing is, Michael, there's not a whole lot else to talk about with this DB room as far as experience, because a lot of these guys have just never done it. I mean, when you look at some of the corners opposite of him, you have Jabril Rawls is one of the names that we're hearing mentioned at the top of the list here. Only 14 tackles last year and 196 snaps. Just below average PFF grade, but 6'1", 185, a guy that's pushing for that position. Again, we talked about the amazing play that he had in practice the other day. Then you also have Quindarius Jones, 12 tackles, one tackle for loss, three PBUs, and 360 snaps. He's one of your more experienced young guys at the position there. He's in for the running too. But then there's also a name that's kind of come out of left field, and that is Shamar Arnaud, a true freshman coming in. Look, man, we have heard nothing but good about this guy in fall camp and how he is just really throwing blockers around and really making himself a part of the defense. And so those three, I think, could be in the running for that other starting corner spot opposite of Jerry Wilson. And they're young and inexperienced, but, man, from what we've heard, I think any of the three can be good. But I also like that you have options, right? So I think you want to give a guy enough room to prove himself. Like, you don't want one bad play and you're switching already. Right. But if a guy's not working, it's not like you feel like you can't trust option two or three.
Correct. I mean, this room is packed. It's loaded. Yeah. And so if one guy's not working out, you can just go to the next guy and go to the next guy. But, you know, Pat Surtain is not bringing in guys just to bring in body. He's bringing in players that he believes that can be developed, that can play, that can actually go out there and make a difference. And so depending on who they're looking at, you know, this, I even suspect that there might be a committee of sorts being used maybe early on for these other positions that they might try out a couple guys, see where they actually are, and then kind of solidify that as well too. But you would like, what you would like is for these guys to start locking up these positions pretty quickly so that you know who you're working with, who your backup is, so that then when you can start formulating plans around how you're going to scheme up against these other offenses that you're going to face.
Yeah, and just to look at the other options at corner here, obviously you still have Charles Lester. He's been making some plays. Kai Bates, Ricky Knight, you know, a bunch of the young guys who just, they just haven't played, man. You still got Edwin Joseph, who's been getting some burn at safety as well. So just a lot of talented but inexperienced guys. And again, I think that's a shout out to Patrick Surtain for, you know, stocking this room full of talented young DBs. It's just now you got to see him put it on the field. You know, now you're not bringing in or bringing back a bunch of experienced guys. I mean, you got Jeremiah Wilson, but you're going to have some young guys step up too. Now, when we talk about safety, Michael, this is obviously a mixed bag. This is kind of an unknown position because one option just departed the roster. I don't think he was in place to start, right? But I certainly thought he had the talent to compete for a starting role, but I wouldn't have tabbed him as a starter. The one that you point your finger at and you really scratch your head over is Shaheem Brown, man. We all thought Shaheem was going to be a bona fide starter, and you just hoped he could be better than he was last year like you had seen in the past. Lots of experience, 27 starts. All at Florida State, almost 1,800 snaps of experience. He was solid in 2023, but then took that step back in 2024, did not look physical. He was one of the loafers, has not really had a great camp, been running with the twos. Sounds like Tony White's kind of called him out, and that lack of physicality is not going to play. So Shaheem is really a question mark there at safety, man, but I think the one that you're looking at that you feel the best about being a starter right now is that's Earl Little Jr., right? He did not have a great season last year, but improved some when he transitioned to safety. Man, he's a hard-hitting, downhill type of player, which is what they want at that Rover safety position in this defense. Practice film at Bama was nice. Now, that is practice film, but we got to see it translate to the game.
That's right.
But, you know, man, if he can take that next step into that starter position at the Rover, I think you feel really good about him. But, you know, really, man, as we talk about safety here, I think KJ Kirkland is a guy you're looking at. It's probably going to be one of your starters, regardless of what Shaheem does or not. 46 tackles, one TFL, two PBUs last year. He's played 473 snaps. So he's got pretty good experience, man. 64.2 PFF grade. You know, but outside of Kirkland and Little, who's going to be that third safety to step up? That's the question I have throughout the rest of camp.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when they brought Earl Little to the ACC media kickoff, you kind of knew they were signaling like this we're going to put this guy, we're going to force him into a leadership role, which meant he probably was going to lock down that Rover spot. But yeah, then your field safety and your boundary safety there, you're still kind of looking for that. You know, we've heard a lot about KJ Kirkland being that option. We've heard a lot about
got Ashlyn Barker.
Yeah. Ashlyn Barker, I've heard several times his name come up from people who get inside information about Ashlyn Barker as well too. So I'll be curious to see who they are. I'm going to trust that whoever Patrick Surtain puts back there, they're going to be decent, because Patrick Surtain, he hasn't, outside of, you know, Shaheem becoming a bust, which isn't really his fault, he hasn't missed, you know, he hasn't really missed on these guys and putting them in the right spot. You know, he can't take credit or he can't get the blame for Shaheem. Shaheem is a veteran. Shaheem is the one that has regressed. And whatever's going on in his mentals right now, his mind, whatever it is, he's got to step it up. This is his money year. This is it. He has no more other options. He's got to put it all together or he's going to walk out of here. And it's just going to be like, well, you remember that 1 year, Shaheem? The outside of that, you didn't really hear much. So I'm curious to see who gets to step into those two safety spots. But I'm going to trust that Pat Surtain will have them ready to go for Bama.
Yeah, man, I don't know if the Hussey situation is going to be the wake-up call that Shaheem needs, but I think in an ideal world, you would like to see Shaheem back there as your starter with a guy who, again, has 27 starts and 1,800 snaps of experience, you know, alongside of a KJ Kirkland who has played almost 500 snaps, but not not a ton of experience, and Earl Little who wasn't really a full-time starter last year. So I think you would really like him to be back there, but I like a lot of the pieces that you got. So you may have to roll with some young guys, but I think you got a lot of talent in the secondary there. But, man, just to kind of round this whole episode out, when you just talk about some final thoughts on this defensive personnel, man, I feel, like we said, I feel the best about the linebackers outside of maybe 2023 that I have felt probably in the last 5-8 years, right? And so I feel like you're maybe not special at that position.
Yep.
But I think you have a high floor, and I think that that's great for your defense. I will say that I feel better about the defensive line after camp. I feel better, especially about the depth at defensive tackle because of Kevin Wynn's early emergence there. I feel better about that. Depth is still my main concern with this defense in general. I do like the pieces in the secondary, but there's going to be some young guys who need to prove themselves and right now in game one. But, man, again, like when you talk about Tony White has produced top 40 defenses, you know, in the past 3 years with less talent, I think whoever he gets on the field, he's going to be able to produce a good defense. And so, man, again, I'll end on this. Like some of the comments with the effort and the not capitalizing on turnovers and things like that, some of that does concern me, right, about maybe how good this defense can be because you're probably going to have to rely on more young guys than you thought.
Right.
And there are some things that are probably going to need to be cleaned up before that Bama game and then after that Bama game. So the thing is, you can't make a lot of these mistakes against Alabama. You can get those out against East Texas A&M and Kent State and still win games. You can't do that against Alabama and expect to win that game. So those things make me a little bit nervous for that first game of the season, but I do think they'll eventually get it sorted out and they'll roll with the, you know, with the guys who are going to give them what they want from an effort and an energy standpoint. And then beyond that, man, I think they'll shape them into a good defense this year. But I like a lot of the pieces that you got. I'm a little disappointed in some of the veteran talk that we've heard. But overall, man, I think there's a really high upside with this defense if they can put it all together. And, you know, the last thing I'll say is Tony White did also talk about the fact that they got back into Doak in that last scrimmage. And it also helped them from a coaching standpoint to kind of get that part figured out as well. So there's a lot, a long way to go in the next 2 weeks. But I feel like this defense could be really good in 2025.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you. Like, I feel a lot more. I feel so much better about the defensive line depth. At, you know, not just DM, but DT with obviously, you know, Jason Jenkins, you know, being basically he's going to be healthy and looks like he's going to play week one snaps there, you know, hopefully barring any setbacks. That made me feel a lot better. I feel like if I had to give a feeling grade, this is what I'll do. I'll give a feeling grade. If I had to give a feeling grade, I probably was coming into the season at like a C plus B minus with the defensive line. I'm feeling B plus now, like solid B plus with the defensive line.
I can see that. Yep.
I've always felt B minus about the linebacker core. That was better because I felt like a D coming in last season. This year, I feel like a solid B minus is really good.
Yep.
And I have felt like a minus for this secondary, even with Conrad Hussey's, you know, dismissal. Thank goodness. Let's get those players who aren't playing out of there and Shy, you're next. If you're not going to willing to step up, bye. Because this is still a really, really good secondary, right?
Yeah.
It has some young pieces that will need to be put into some hard situations and they might make a mistake or two, but man, I'm really excited about this. So I give them a solid A minus. That's my feeling, not performance, my feeling.
Right. But no, I think it's kind of where you want to be, right? Coming out of, or about midway through camp. Like you feel better than you did going into camp.
Right.
But with any team, you still know you got a way to go. And you know, some of this, when you talk about the talk of Tony White, some of this could be, I do wonder how much of this is a coach trying to motivate his players by calling them out, right? Because you're giving some praise, but you're also kind of salting the wound a little bit there as well. So some of it, I wonder if he's just not trying to light a fire under some of these players. And, you know, again, man, that does concern me. Like, I feel better about where the overall defense is. I do have a little concern with that part of it. But, man, I trust Tony White, and I trust the pieces that they have to put together a good team or a good defense this year. And so that's going to do it for part two of the defensive preview, Michael. Lots to talk about here, but you know what? We got no time to dwell on it because we still have our final season preview with some hot takes, maybe some record predictions. We'll see. This team's pretty hard to predict this year, but we're going to roll that out for you guys as soon as possible. We're going to start working on the Bama preview so we can get it out for you guys nice and early. So lock in with us right now, guys. Hit that like and subscribe button. Hit that notification bell so you can stay connected with your guys here at Plant the Spear. Also, if you'd like to take that one step further and join the channel as a tribe member, just hit that join button, and there will be some exclusive member benefits throughout the season. But as always, Michael, all of our content is free all the time. And so really, we just appreciate you guys supporting us. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans as well. Check out plantthespear.com, our website. We have written articles. All of our podcast episodes and YouTube videos are available over there as well. So, man, Michael, we are almost to the finish line, man. I'm just getting excited, but we appreciate you guys rocking with us for this episode, and we will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles. Go Noles.